Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IGO-INGO Access to Curative Rights Protection PDP Working Group call on the 3rd of December 2014. On the call today, we have Petter Renforth, George Karokas, Paul Tattersfield, Gary Campbell, Lori Schulman, and Philip Corwin. We have apologies from Mason Cole and David Maher. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, Mary Wong, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Phil.
Thank you. And, yes, Phil Corwin here, your co-chair, and chairing the meeting for today. It's my turn. Do we have any updates to statement of interest before we proceed to the main agenda? Hearing none. Mason, as noted, Mason Cole cannot be with us today, but Mason made Petter and I aware yesterday that he has sent an inquiry to the GNSO Council liaison to the GAC, and with this working group being the initial focus of his liaison role because of the GAC's interest in the issues we're dealing with. He sent a email to several members of the GAC yesterday, including the new chair, Thomas Schneider, making them aware of the current status of our work and asking specific questions on our behalf regard to the GAC's view. Yeah, welcome, Nat. The letter asked the GAC for feedback on the issue of whether the current UDRP and URS fees are considered to be nominal by the GAC, because they've made a emphasis on that, and asking for the GAC's rationale for opposing any UDRP amendments to provide IGOs with access to the UDRP, and asking some further questions on that. I should say separately, I was contacted by Suzanne Riddell, who's the U.S. representative on the GAC. She became aware of the fact that we, actually that George Karokas had discovered this 2002 communication from the State Department to the U.S. office at the U.N. regarding how the U.S. would be implementing Article 6-tier protections. I directed her to the document. She hadn't seen it before. She's going to be checking on whether that remains the U.S. position. It probably is, but we want to make sure it is. And she also offered her help in assisting with getting information back to the GAC, back from the GAC to our working group, and she was one of the folks that Mason emailed this inquiry to yesterday. So our engagement with the GAC has begun, and we'll see how that goes. Did anyone have any questions? I think you're also all aware, we probably discussed in the past, that our letter of inquiry to the GNSO asking for some guidance in regard to the GAC LA communique, which touched on our work, did go to the GNSO Council. I believe they noted it at their last meeting, but we don't have any response back from them yet. As soon as we have any kind of formal response, we'll, of course, note that and share it with the working group. That's all of my updates on action items. Did Mary, did staff have any updates beyond that? And once you speak, if there's any members of the working group who want to ask questions or discuss anything I just covered, that would be welcome. Mary?
Actually, Phil, thank you. And everybody, hi, this is Mary from staff. We do have a brief update, and Steve's going to provide that. Steve?
Thanks, Mary. This is Steve for the transcript. So we've made quite a bit of progress on the work for this group. And so some of the things that we worked on have gone a bit beyond the work of the subgroups that we initially started, I want to say, a couple months ago. So we thought it'd be useful to go back through our work plan and to determine which ones are actually done and which ones are still pending, so that when we get to the point where we have outcomes and recommendations, we have a solid foundation for how we reach those outcomes. So like I said, while we've made good progress on things like determine the difference between IGOs and INGOs, consideration of the cost issue, so that some of these items that are going to be addressed further down in our work plan. And so while it's good that we're making progress on this, I think it's also good that we finish up some of the initial items that we worked on. So I'm just going to run through all the subgroup work that's been done to date, and if anyone wants to interrupt me and go ahead and make a comment on those things, go ahead and do that. But so I'll just start with subgroup A and just work our way down and make sure we're all in agreement about where we are as a group. So for the first item under subgroup A, it's to identify the difference between the UDRP and the URS. Staff and I think the subgroup A also agree that this one's actually complete. Jim Bykoff supplied a document that's very detailed and complete in our estimation. And so this has actually been updated to the wiki, and the group can go review this document and see if they agree or disagree. But thanks, Jim, for supplying that document. The second one in the subgroup A's list is to collaborate with the UDRP and URS dispute resolution providers, as well as experienced panelists for input. This one, the subgroup determined that they basically deemed it inappropriate to ask the providers for opinions on specific outcomes that were reached. So I believe the subgroup is also considered this one to be complete. The third one is to obtain representative samples of IGO or IGOs and INGOs who have filed UDRP and URS claims. The subgroup agreed that it was a task for, actually put a different way, Christine volunteered graciously to actually compare the list against the NAF database, and Brian Beckham was also tagged to compare against the WIPO list. So I've been able to share the GAC list of IGOs to the subgroup for that purpose. I don't know that it's actually done yet. What we're still missing, or I guess what is still outstanding, is the list of all the INGOs. And I think this is actually a point for discussion, as we are potentially removing INGOs for further consideration for inclusion in any amended or narrowly tailored DRP. Is it warranted for us to actually continue the research on the INGOs and their usage of the UDRP and URS? So, Petter, I see your hand up. Can you go ahead?
Hi, Petter Rainford here. I think it's actually, it would be good to still have samples of the IGOs, but as we have moved forward when it comes to INGOs, we have, during the work, we have collected some samples, just a handful of, but good examples of INGOs disputes using especially the UDRP, but I think also the URS. And I think we can actually stay with those just as some initial examples of and base for our also for our already decided movement to just proceed with IGOs. So still I see Christine's comment there, and the ball is still running, so it would be good to finalize on IGOs, but as I said, I think we can drop the INGOs there. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm in general agreement with that, Petter. Why don't you continue, Steve?
And actually just one more point on that one is that, so I think while the group has just agreed that we're going to omit the INGO research, I think staff is still going to work with the managers of the INGO or the ECOSOC list to obtain a CSV of all of those names, just so that in the event we do change our mind, we are prepared to still go down that route. So moving on to subgroup B. The first one is to define the scope of legal protections for IGOs under Article 6 TER and then compare with Geneva Conventions and Nairobi Treaty. The treaty text and the WIPO 2 documents are already uploaded to the background documents on the wiki, and I think we would consider this one from a staff perspective and hopefully from a working group perspective to be complete. The next one is to obtain representative samples of IGOs and INGOs with registered trademarks. And so I think this one follows on from the discussion of the U.S. Telegram and that it provides rights to file for a mark, but you must also be prepared to defend that mark in the national court if they feel their rights have been infringed upon. So I think we need to validate that the position from the U.S. is still current and valid, and then we also need to see that the the positions are from other countries, another representative sample of how SIXTER status is treated in those countries. So I would consider that one to still be pending. And I think we also want to start looking at a manual search of the GAC list of IGOs to determine their status in a representative set of countries. I think we were looking at Australia, Canada, South Africa, South Korea, and the U.S. I think this is going to be a brute force trademark search or trademark view search by staff. I think we're going to take advantage of the break to be able to, perhaps not during the break, but so that break and at least maybe a meeting schedule to be able to start doing some of that research and catch up and hopefully finish this item off. Moving on. We need to identify the number of IGOs that sought protection under Article 6 TER. And I think that George has already done this a great amount of work for this for us, so I think we have a preliminary, this is preliminary done. And this is actually already available on the background documents, so if anyone wants to take another look at that, it's available for your review. And finally, we have obtained representative sample of IGOs and the scope of mission and geographic presence. So this is something that has not actually been initiated and is potentially, and please speak up if you disagree, something that is not necessarily critical what we're doing at this moment. So we might be able to move on to some of the subsequent work items and then perhaps round back to this one when we near completion. So if anyone disagrees with the approach, please go ahead and raise your hand. Seeing none, moving on to subgroup C, which was the review of the prior work, which includes the 2003 President's Joint Working Group on the 2001 WIPO report, so this is actually an item that we also consider done. The summary of this work, or the previous work done to date, is also available on the wiki, so we would also consider this one done. And so I think that concludes the update. So I think we are, for the most part, complete with most of the items done through subgroup A, B, and C. Thank you. Back to you, Phil.
Thank you for the report, Steve. Just let me know. Steve referred to the break. Let me bring that up now. It's a quick item. The co-chairs in our call with staff this morning, we noted that our next two calls are scheduled for Wednesday the 10th and 17th. The following two calls would fall on Christmas Eve or in some parts of Europe, Christmas Day. They treat the 24th as Christmas Day. The following week, the 31st, would be New Year's Eve. We note that, you know, we have participants who may be in Asia, who are in Europe, so it doesn't seem to be wise to schedule calls on those days. So we're going to have calls the next two Wednesdays. We're going to take a two-week break during which We can do research on various topics, and we can still have exchanges by email. And then we'll kick off again in early January, the first week of January, with our first call of the year. So I just, if anybody wants to discuss that, speak up now, but it's pretty straightforward. Doesn't seem to make sense to hold calls on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve. And we'll use that time for research and email exchanges. All right, so...
Phil, can I ask a question?
Yes.
It's Jim Bykoff.
I know your voice, Jim.
You can hear me?
I can hear you, and I know your voice, but thanks for identifying yourself.
Thank you, Phil. I came in a few minutes late, so I didn't hear your remarks. I assume you were talking about Suzanne Riddell?
Yes, Suzanne had contacted me. She had not been aware of the 2002 communication that George Kirikos had unearthed from the State Department about how IGOs could assert their rights in the U.S. She asked me to help her find it. I got the document to her. She's going to be checking with State to make sure that's still the U.S. position 12 years later, although she has no reason to think that anything's changed, and she's offered to help obtain similar information from participants within the GAC, and I also reported on an email that Mason Cole had sent to several, to the chair and several members of the GAC yesterday, raising questions on nominal cost and UDRP amendments with them. So we've got communications going with the GAC through the GNSO liaison.
Okay. I just wanted to add then that last week, last Friday, I believe it was, I spoke with Mark Carvel, who's the UK representative on the GAC, and told him about our group and what we're doing, and he was very interested, and you know, I encouraged him to consider perhaps having somebody, either himself or somebody from the GAC, that might even serve as an observer on our working group. Also discussed the possibility of getting things to the GAC earlier so that they could participate in between ICANN meetings so that they're not surprised and have to, you know, discuss things for the first time at a meeting, which usually means that, you know, not much gets circulated or discussed between the meetings. Anyway, he's going to discuss that with others in the GAC and with the new chair, Mr. Schneider in Switzerland. So I think maybe maybe we'll see some progress there between your discussions with Suzanne and my discussions with Mark.
Yeah, and thank you for that update, Jim. And in fact, Mark Carvel was one of the GAC members that Mason communicated with yesterday. He communicated with Susan Riddell, also with Tom Schneider, the new chair from Switzerland, and with Manal Ismail, who I believe is from Egypt. So we've got a number of GAC members and the chairs who are being communicated with about our work. We don't want any surprises. We want to be in close contact, and so that even if they don't agree with all of our decisions, they know what they are and why we're doing them and why we've taken them. And that's a good segue into discussion of the letter we circulated yesterday, which is going to all supporting organizations and advisory committees, which would include the GAC, to update them on our work and most specifically on the fact that we have decided to drop INGOs from further inquiry. And I see that on the screen. It's not untethered, so I don't know if we can untether that so people can move it on their own. But basically, it starts with an intro about the main focus of our work. And by the way, I took the initial draft that Mary had prepared, and I did extensive modifications and additions to it. The biggest addition was a whole attachment for our rationale for not proceeding on INGOs. So I'm just going to go very quickly through each paragraph here, and if people have comments they want to make on this, I would welcome that. And I think a good way to deal with this is to keep the discussion open through the end of the week, so that if people haven't had a chance to read this yet and that this discussion is a matter of first impression, give everyone until close of business on Friday to get comments and suggestions in, and then take those under advisement and prepare a final document to go to the SOs and ECs first thing next week. Does that sound like a good way to proceed? Any objections to that?
No objections, Phil. When did you send that out? Because I don't remember seeing it yesterday.
Mary sent it out yesterday with the agenda. It was an attachment
to
the agenda email. So everyone on the working group should have gotten it. So the initial paragraphs just introduce our work. Says that we started work in August, that we're supposed to reach out on early stage to all GNSO stakeholder groups and constituencies to seek input, and that's what we're doing right now. And then the first thing we inform them of is that we've reached a majority decision that there's no principled reason to consider INGOs as a special category of protected organizations. We note that the rationale is provided in Attachment A. I didn't want to put the whole rationale in the body of the letter, but there is a very extensive, page and a half attachment which lays out the reasons why we're not going to proceed with INGOs. And I thought it was best to lay that out in detail now, particularly for the GAC, and so they understand our reasonings, and if they disagree strongly, they can come back now with their own reasons. We're going to have to prepare stuff like this for a final report anyway, so why not just do it now while it's fresh in our minds and have it on record? And I thought that'd be much better than just saying we decided to drop INGOs and you know, not give any detailed explanation, and we asked for their reaction on that decision. So that's the first part. And I'm just going to watch for hands raised for those in the chat room, or Jim, you and others.
Can I interrupt you for a moment?
Yeah.
I just want to say that when I talked to Mark Carvel, I got the impression, although he didn't say it flat out, that he was much less concerned with anything involving INGOs, that wasn't really a subject of, the GAC pushing for protection. It's IGOs that they are most concerned with.
Right. Well, that's good feedback. I don't expect massive pushback on this, but, we put it on the record and they can react. The second point is that we've reviewed all the prior work on this subject and that we want feedback on the issue of trademarks or substantially similar rights, which is standing for the UDRP-URS, and notes that we're still investigating the ability of IGOs to obtain trademarks and names of acronyms, and then we ask them for to give us any input on, other than trademark rights, what would be the basis for any standing criteria to be required in a dispute resolution process, whether we... if we decide that's needed, either in the form of amendments to the UDRP or URS, or as a specifically narrowly tailored CRP just for IGOs. Next issue we raise is the fact that both as domain registrants and as complainants under the UDRP or URS, IGOs agree to submit to the jurisdiction of a national court. We say it may be problematic, but that we're analyzing the sovereign immunity issue and conducting research on how various nations have chosen to implement Article 6 tier within their own jurisdictions. And then we ask them flat out, how should a rights process deal with this problem, and again, it may be a problem, it may not. We may want to qualify the word problem there and call it potential problem, while also assuring adequate due process protection for registrants, because if there's not going to be appeal to national court, if we decide there is a real sovereign immunity issue and we don't have the information yet to make that decision one way or the other, we've got to be fair to registrants. So we're asking for input on that. And I think not only are we asking for input, we're really alerting all these groups to the key issues we're going to be considering moving forward and giving them a chance to provide input to us at this point in our deliberations. So we're going to have a good, solid record that no one should be surprised, no matter what our final recommendations about the issues we're grappling with. Then we raised the nominal cost issue, and we ask them flat out whether we note that we have no ability to create any fund or subsidy mechanism. It's not part of our charge, nor do we have any authority to do so. And we ask them whether they consider the existing UDRP and URS fees to constitute, quote, nominal cost, unquote. If they don't think so, let them tell us now, and also if they've got any ideas on who should pay for it. If the complainant can't pay, we'd welcome that as well. It certainly raises the issue. And then we asked for input without asking specific without posing specific questions on a whole host of other on four other issues that are before the committee, which are more substantial issues. And then after the signatory line begins attachment A, which goes on for, as I said, almost two full pages explaining our rationale for deciding that INGOs do not require a separate procedure or amendments to the UDRP, that they have more than enough ability to protect their rights under the present scheme by obtaining trademarks in their names or acronyms, and then bringing a UDRP or URS just as any other party would. So so that's the entire letter. Do we have any comments on it at that point, at this point in time? Or is everybody really happy with it? We will take silence as indicative of great happiness.
No, I have not had a chance to read it yet, so okay. I would get comments back to you this week.
Okay.
If any.
Okay. I note in the chat room George found another UDRP involving a an INGO, I believe. Is that an INGO? No, that's a UNITAID. It looks like an IGO. Yeah, one of the few cases brought by an IGO. I want to point out one. I want to get an issue out on the table here. We don't have to decide it now. I don't think we should decide it now. But you'll note on the second page of the letter, the first bullet point where we ask for input is on whether UDRP should be a consensus policy, and then considerations of applying policies formulated by this working group to both legacy GTLDs and new GTLDs being delegated in the expansion round. And then there's a note that this may include the URS, which is currently mandatory only for new GTLDs, and we note that the GNSO is scheduled to examine the new TLD RPMs in 2015. I'm going to make a personal statement now. But at some point we're going to have to. We've been asked, and it's certainly not our main focus to on the issue of whether the U.S. URS should be a consensus policy. And then you know, we're being asked to consider amendments to the UDRP and the URS. In my view, if we decide that to protect IGOs, we need to create some amendment to UDRP or URL. Let's say we decide there's some issue with the existing dispute resolution policies, either in terms of standing or in terms of appeal because of sovereign immunity, but that we don't have to create an entirely new curative rights process. It can be addressed by targeted amendments. In my view, if we decide to amend UDRP or URS, they should continue to apply as they do UDRP available at incumbent legacy and new TLDs, URS remaining and implementation of the rights protections for new TLDs. To go the next step and declare the URS a consensus policy, I'm against that for two reasons. The first would be that it would really require a tremendous second effort, not just focusing on IGOs, but on focusing on the use of the URS to date, getting input from complainants, from registrants, from dispute providers. And even though it's in the resolution, I think that's a real diversion from what's a tough enough issue before us. And second, we know there's a GNSO Council resolution which puts in place, sets the stage for a PDP on the efficacy of the new RPMs to commence 18 months after the first TLD was launched, which I believe is going to be April or May of 2015 when we hit that 18-month mark. So I think it would be wrong for us to in any way preempt or prejudice the work of that group with what's really a side issue for us. So again, the only thing I'm saying is I don't think it should be within the output of this group to recommend that the URS should be available at legacy TLDs. But that's not to be decided today. I did want to highlight that issue because it's raised in the letter, the draft letter to the SOs and ACs, and I wanted to get that on the table. I see Mary's hand up, and then Mary, why don't you comment, and then we'll see if anyone else has comments here.
Thanks, Phil. Hi, everybody. It's Mary again. Actually, I wasn't going to comment on this point, Phil. It was on a different point. But,
sure.
But on this point, I guess I'll just say for to the rest of the group is that obviously Phil and Petter and the staff are discussing this and, you know, how best to approach this when the appropriate time comes. The point I wanted to make was really actually very minor, and it was about the letter and it being sent. And again, a reminder that we have to solicit this input from the stakeholder groups and constituencies within the GNSO, and the letter is phrased with that in mind. As we note in the agenda, this can be tweaked for sending and solicitation of input from the other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees. And the sense that staff got from the last discussion is that the working group would be minded to do that as well, because under the working group guidelines we're encouraged, although not mandated. So my question, Phil, is the working group would be comfortable with you, Petter, and staff working on tweaking the language of this letter, not the substance and certainly not the questions or the rationale, but, you know, things like how we address the chairs and maybe, you know, the way that we ask for the input. So more stylistic changes than anything else. I didn't think so, but I just wanted to double-check that that would be okay with the group.
Yeah, I'm certainly comfortable with that. If anyone has thoughts or concerns about that, they should raise their hand or provide input. And Mary, as I noted, I think we should, because some people are just seeing this letter for the first time, we should keep it open for working group comments through the end of the week. Maybe you can send a reminder around after today's call, and then take whatever we get on by the close of business on Friday, and then finalize the letter first thing next week and get it out with any tweaking we need for particular SOs or ACs so we can get this done before people get embroiled in getting ready for Christmas and New Year's. And the other thing on the issue I raised, which was about consensus policy and availability of URS and legacy TLDs, we'll discuss that further in the new year. Mary made a very good suggestion today, which is that this is something we probably want to bring up when we meet again with the GNSO Council in Singapore in February. So we'll have time to discuss that. We'll make further progress on our overall work, and then I think the GNSO would be comfortable with the decision to leave that very big question of expansion of URS to .com and other legacy TLDs to that much broader RPM group that's going to be starting up in the spring. But we can raise it with them in Singapore. All right. Well, let me ask now, and if not, we'll move on. Are there any more comments, questions, suggestions, anything to do with this draft letter at this point in the call? If there are, please raise your hand or speak up now. If not, we're going to move on to the next item. All right. I guess we're moving on. Good. Glad everyone's happy with the letter. And again, you have the next 48 hours to get back to us with more feedback on that. Item 4, and time does permit, we have 19 minutes left. Commence discussions of next work plan task, develop potential considerations, for example, qualifying requirements, authentication criteria, and appeal processes for IGOs and INGOs that would be relevant to their use of the existing or new DRPs. Let me note, while INGOs are in that sentence, we've decided not to do any further work on INGOs, so we're not going to be mentioning them. Any further, in my mind, the main work before us here is to deal with the standing issue, to deal with IGO specifically on whether trademark registrations provide them with adequate standing for UDRP or URS purposes, and if not, what would be a basis for standing, and in that we need to do further research on the extent to which they can trademark their names and acronyms and the extent to which they've done so and use them in UDRP or URS proceedings. The other one is on the appeal process. That brings up the sovereign immunity issue, and we're going to have to do more research on that. We've initiated, Mason's initiated this inquiry to the GAC on that factor, and we're going to need to consider if we need to go beyond straight trademark registration, how to define the activity of an IGO, because what we could create or look to that would be analogous to goods and services categories, which define the scope of trademark. So I'll stop there. I'd welcome input for staff on how to better define how to go forward, and I welcome feedback from working group members on that point. And Mary has raised her hand. Go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Phil. As you noted, it would be good to get feedback from the working group on how to proceed, and as you've broken down the various tasks and the substantive issues facing us, it might be useful to have a small group take on each issue or task and maybe do some brainstorming and come back to the main group with some ideas for discussion. The work plan task as phrased was in some part derived from a similar exercise that Jim and others might remember that we did in the prior IGO working group, and that was fairly useful in that there were some substantive discussions that the full working group then benefited from. So in terms of a staff suggestion, this is just something for you all to consider as to whether using a small group for each of these tasks or issues to at least brainstorm might be something you want to do.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. It certainly worked out, the subgroups worked out well for our initial work. So I think that's something worth considering. And then those groups could focus in on required research over the next few weeks to inform the full working group. We have other thoughts on how to proceed?
Phil, just Jim Bykoff again for the record. When do we expect to get some feedback from the IGOs and GAC as to, more of a definition of the problem that they see with the IGOs so that we don't do a lot of research that then later turns out to be not necessary?
I'm not really sure of the answer to that. You know, they've just had initial outreach from Mason Cole as of yesterday. That's the GAC. I forget what, if anything, has been done with the IGOs so far, although a lot of that communication is through the GAC.
I think it's rather curious. We had, as Mary probably remembers, we had quite a number of participants in the last PDP from the IGOs, including WIPO, including, I can't name them all, but there must have been at least 5 or 10 that participated in telephone conferences on the issues of that PDP. And yet on this one, while I think we may have maybe Brian Beckham, although I haven't heard him on any of these phone calls, we really don't have anybody that's weighing in and expressing a position on behalf of the IGOs yet, at least. And it would be good to know whether they still believe this is a problem or not. And there's been some questions about whether it is, the access.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I see Mary's hand up. Maybe she has some information for us on this.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Jim. I can't speak for the IGOs or the GAC for that matter, but to the extent it helps, as Phil noted, Mason has reached out, including to the GAC, and the GAC has also been forwarded the questions that our group formulated to the IGOs, and we have also sent those questions through the staff who are working with the NGPC and the IGOs on the other PDP outstanding issues. So as far as staff know, those questions have been transmitted to and through all the available channels. In terms of IGO participation, a couple of points, I guess. One is that Brian is an observer to this working group, and as an observer, it means that he follows the mailing list and obviously gets the recordings and the transcripts, but does not participate on the calls. Like I said, I can't speak for the IGOs, or any of them, or collectively, but my sense or suspicion is that because there is still outstanding discussion and work on the prior PDP, and as we all know, that discussion is ongoing between the board through the NGPC, the GNSO through the council, and the IGOs and the GAC, there's a lot of focus and attention on that on the IGO side. So while they are concerned and aware of the curative rights issues, I suspect for them it's just a lot of things going on. But my sense, like I said, is that they are aware and they are concerned, and certainly the questions that we had, and Jim, you just noted some of those have been sent on to them.
Thanks, Mary.
Okay. So any further discussion on, next step in the work plan? Or hearing none, I'm just going to assume that the group wants Petter and I to consult with staff and just perhaps look at this suggestion of creating a new subgroup or two to focus on the different issues, and then raise that on emails later this week or early next week and discuss that next week and then get going. Does that seem reasonable? Comments on that? Everyone's either very happy with our work or very we're fighting to maintain consciousness because we're getting very little feedback on this call. I'll take it as a sign that everyone's very happy with our work. Well, beyond that is next steps, and the only thing I can think of beyond next steps in the work plan, which will probably involve creating a subgroup or two to focus on the standing and sovereign immunity issues while research on those matters continues, is to put out there, and I don't think it's, we're not in a position to start discussion yet, but just to remind folks that we are having an all-day face-to-face meeting the day after the full ICANN meeting ends in Singapore, and we're going to want to start discussion soon, perhaps on our last call of this month, which will be the 17th, and certainly by our first call in January, of what we want to accomplish at that face-to-face. I suspect we may be pretty far along with research and preliminary conclusions on our main issues by then, and the face-to-face meeting may provide a very good opportunity to make lots of progress in a dedicated day of being in the same room and really getting into detail. But I think it's premature to talk about what the agenda should be now because we don't know where we're going to be in mid to late January, but I just want to raise it again to remind everyone of that meeting. And hopefully we'll have good participation there, both in person and remotely. I don't have anything else for this meeting. Everyone has 48 hours to give us further feedback on the draft letter to the SONACs. We'd welcome your input by email on next steps on standing, sovereign immunity, or any other issues you think we need to grapple with. So does anyone else want to raise any other points, questions, make suggestions, or anything before we we're 8 minutes before the hour, but if we're done, we're done. There's no reason to prolong the call. Well, it appears that we are done, so again, if you have feedback on the draft letter, get it to us by your close of business on Friday, and staff and co-chairs will finalize the letter early next week and get it out to all the SOs and ACs. And thank you for your participation, and I think we can stop recording and end the call.